From Cortland, New York, America's smallest small city, it's the Nerd Bomber Podcast, featuring the best news, entertainment, and related discussion that pop culture has to offer. And now, your hosts and experts in anti-social media, Just Jamie and your friend Claude! Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I am your friend Claude, here as usual with
Just Jamie.
And today's show is all about science fiction movies, but there's a catch. Tell us about it, sir.
Well, they all take place in the future, but that future is now in our real life past.
Well, if you can follow that, then we have a great show for you. But before we go forward into the past, let's get caught up with the present. On the previous episode, we heard Cousin Adam's thoughts on Halloween, and now it's your turn.
Okay.
Jamie, what are your feelings about it, and how was your Halloween, sir?
My Halloween this year was very uneventful. My kids went trick-or-treating with their mom, and it wasn't a great night for Halloween in terms of trick-or-treating. It was windy and rainy and really, really messy. And we live kind of out in the sticks a little bit, so we had one set of trick-or-treaters, which are the kids of personal friends that we know. So that's about it. That's the summary of my Halloween. My thoughts on Halloween are that I really like it. I like the season. I like October. I heard your comments on the Halloween episode, and I agree with those. It's kind of creatively inspirational, and I like all of the iconography, etc. But unfortunately, most of the time, I don't actually end up doing much.
Right. Same here, especially, you know, as the years go by. There's just so many more responsibilities and other activities that get in the way of the Halloween experience as I would like it to be, I guess.
Yeah, and we still just like keep it on the 31st. It's like randomly on a Thursday night this year or a Wednesday night. And it should just be observed on a Friday night or a Saturday night, whatever.
Yeah, you know, out of all the holidays, I'm not even sure how many or if it's only one or two. But of all the ones that are arranged to be on a certain day every year, Halloween deserves to be one of them.
Yes, I agree with that. So I did have some commentary on the episode since I didn't get to be a part of it and I was jealous. There was one comment that you made about the prevalence of these sort of movies taking place in the suburbs with dark secrets and mysterious things happening. You mentioned Erie, Indiana, Twin Peaks, Edward Scissorhands, the movie The Burbs, and one that I just wanted to throw in there because it was kind of, wasn't mentioned, was Picket Fences. I feel like fits really nicely into that collection.
Yeah, right smack in the middle of that time period. And very much just as weird and avant-garde, I guess.
Yep.
But still packaged in the mundane and the quote-unquote normal.
Right, exactly.
And it might be worth mentioning that Erie, Indiana's Justin Schenkero is also on Picket Fences, so there's a commonality there as well.
Right. So that's my little post-Halloween contribution to the show that was.
Beautiful. And now it's time for this week's installment of 3-2-1 Pop.
3-2-1 Pop!
This is the part of the show where we discuss three current pop culture headlines and rank them as we see fit. Kicking us off at number 3 this week is the opening box office performance of Terminator Dark Fate.
Sarah Connor, the day has come.
He's the most lethal Terminator ever created. You don't fight it, you run from it.
Clearly you don't know me. That thing will keep coming.
Based on the weapons we have, I estimate our chances at 12%. Make it 9%.
Terminator Dark Fate, rated R.
You know, it seems a little bit ridiculous that words like bomb and flop were being tossed around after only its first 2 days of release. However, nearly all movies seem to be judged this way now. And in my opinion, it's no less insane every time, because here's why doing that might be a little hasty. It has solid reviews across much of the internet, and it's already surpassed the previous Terminator movie's opening weekend domestically by about $2 million.
Yeah, because Terminator Genesis was the previous movie, and that made $27 million in the first couple days, and this one, Dark Fate, made $29 million. And Dark Fate, you already mentioned, it actually has higher, better reviews. So if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, for instance, for Dark Fate, it's 70% critically fresh, I guess you'd say, and 84% fresh in terms of the audience reviews. And for Genesis, those numbers were 27 and 53, respectively. So it's tracking a lot better in terms of the opinion, which usually tracks to a better box office total because it gets a little bit better word of mouth. And the budget of the movie was $185 million. And the thing that is really important to a lot of movies, everybody always wants to focus on domestic totals. But you got to look at the global numbers, and the global opening weekend projection is $102 million. So maybe the fate of the sixth Terminator installment doesn't look that dark after all. So yeah, you have to look at those. There's a lot of movies that are very successful that the domestic totals wouldn't necessarily tell you that. Alita Battle Angel is a recent example of that. Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim from a few years ago is another example of that. And so I think that, to be fair to a movie, you really have to look at its overall impact.
Absolutely. It's still early, and time will tell. Coming in at number two is the recently released Funko app. There is a newish official app for tracking and pricing all Funko collectibles put out by the company themselves. I say newish because it was actually released about 6 months ago. You can track all of their products on it, but it's very clearly focused on Funko Pops.
Course.
Which have been mentioned a time or two on this show. And I, just to reiterate what was said before, I'm on record as saying I'm not a fan, but somehow they are still big enough business to warrant this.
Yeah, I'm not into them. I get it. I do get it. It's an easy way to engage with nerd culture, I guess. They're very available. You can find just about any obscure thing that you're into. So I get it. I'm just not personally into it.
Yeah. Nor am I. The app itself is a combination of the Funko product catalog, a popular collecting app called Stashpedia that they bought out entirely, and an allegedly independent third-party pricing service called Pop Price Guide. I say allegedly because Pop is in the name, but they swear that they will maintain their integrity.
All right. I mean, this kind of reeks of speculation, and that they're going to set the market value for things. I had not heard this story at all until you put it in the show notes, and I was not aware of the app. I am very aware of Funko Pops, obviously. I can't say I'm not a little bit cynical about the real purpose here.
Yeah, and we also have not spoken about it before recording this part, and those are my thoughts exactly. Go figure. Even though the app was created about 6 months ago, it's currently trending on Twitter, likely due to the wishlist feature that has people sharing theirs in anticipation of the Christmas season.
Right.
Speaking of anticipation, this week's number one pop culture headline is the announcement of the release date for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2, which has been set for April 8th of 2022. This is anticipated for many reasons. Among them, however, are that the first movie, Into the Spider-Verse, won both the Golden Globe and the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature last year, as well as receiving the Ultimate Award, unanimous high praise from the Nerd Bomber podcast.
Hear, hear.
There was a 10-second announcement teaser released on November 1st, which quickly flashes between several different versions of the Graffiti Spider logo, which has already led to speculation and analysis about what each version might mean by freeze framers around the world.
Yeah, I have actually a whole list of possibilities here. A lot of them wouldn't be surprising. You've got Ben Reilly, you've got a Japanese version of Spider-Man. You've got the mystery symbol. Nobody seems to know there's a mystery symbol somewhere in there that people aren't sure of. Spider Carnage, Jessica Drew. And the other one I see here is Mr. Negative.
I also saw there's a one that has a paperclip above the symbol.
where everything looks very realistic, leading to speculation of the animated Spider-Man making a trip into the live-action world.
Oh, that would be pretty bonkers.
Yeah. Already people are talking about possibly including Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield or even, you know, Tom Holland.
I mean, I'm fully in support of that. I mean, I feel like once the movie came out and then there was all these questions about what was going to happen to the live-action Spider-Man movies as DC and Sony were fighting over it, people were kind of hoping that maybe a possibility would be to see a live-action Spider-Verse that would feature those actors. So it's interesting if they just go whole hog and mix the animated with the live-action, etc.
Well, that would really be one way to truly make the sequel a bigger affair than the first movie.
It would be pretty ballsy.
I'm excited enough about that idea that I'll be disappointed when it doesn't happen.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
Well, from a movie about alternate realities to movies about alternate futures, let's time hop to this week's main topic. So as we mentioned at the top of the show, today's main topic deals with movies that were set in the future when they were made, but we have now currently passed the time those movies were set.
Yeah, I actually have a whole list of them here. There's no way we have time to talk about them all, but I'll just kind of list them off, and if you didn't understand the premise, I think you'll catch on as we go here. So we're going to go in the Wayback Machine, and we'll start with the book called 1984. And it was 1984 is in our past, but it was written in 1949. So 1949, they were projecting forward to 84, but now 84 is in our pretty distant past at this point. Escape from New York, the movie starring Kurt Russell, came out in 1981. That was projecting forward to 1997. The TV show Space 1999 was projecting, obviously, to 1999. And that aired from 1975 to 77. Moving ahead. And by the way, this list is chronological in order of when the movies take place, not when they were made.
Right.
There's also TV shows here. So next up is 2001 A Space Odyssey, taking place, no surprise, in 2001. That came out in 68. Taking place in 2004 is Time Cop, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. That came out in 94. The cartoon Thundar the Barbarian, which aired from 80 to 82, took place in 2004. The Transformers movie from 1986 took place in 2005. The movie Free Jack from 1992 took place in 2009. The cartoon series Macross / its American recut, Robotech, came out in 1982, and that took place in 2009 to 2012. The movie 2010, The Year We Make Contact, takes place obviously in 2010. That came out in 84. The movie 2012 takes place in, you guessed it, 2012. That came out in 2009. The sequel from Escape from L.A., came out in 1996. That takes place in 2013. The anime series Neon Genesis Evangelion takes place in 2015. That came out in 95. The TV show Sequest DSV came out, it ran from 93 to 97 and took place from 2015 to 2018. The video game Alien Soldier came out in 1995, and that took place in 2015. Back to the Future 2 jumps ahead to 2015, and that came out in 1989. The Schwarzenegger movie The Sixth Day takes place in 2015. That came out in 2000. Rollerball, starring James Caan, came out in 1975. That takes place in 2018. The Running Man, starring Schwarzenegger again, came out in 87. That takes place in 2019. The X-Men story Days of Future Past, which was written in 1980, takes place in 2019. The TV show Dark Angel takes place in 2019. That ran in 2000. The movie Blade Runner came out in 1982. That took place in 2019. The novel that it's based on, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, was published in 1968 and took place in 1992. And the franchise Akira takes place in 2019. The manga was published from 1982 to 1990, and the anime came out in 1988. So there is a really quick-ish list of movies and other franchises that basically take place in the future from when they were written, but that future is now in our past.
Right, and it seems like, out of the list you've compiled, the years 2015 and 2019 were kind of the two hotbeds for things being set in those times.
It seems to be the case.
So, we have each picked a property from the list from 2015 and 2019 to discuss. Let's continue to go chronologically and start with 2015.
So the thing that I picked from 2015 was the TV series Sequest DSV.
Journey into the far reaches of aquaspace.
Attention, security brief.
Brace for impact. Seal outer doors, rig for collision.
Launch countermeasures.
Steven Spielberg's Amblin Entertainment Inc. and Universal Television comes a journey into the future and beneath the sea. Roy Scheider stars in Sequest DSV, Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. 5 Pacific.
It ran from September of 1993 to June of 1996, and the beginning of the series took place in 2015 and then went forward from there. DSV stands for Deep Submerged Vehicle, by the way. This aired on NBC. It was an hour show, which means the episodes are actually like 45 minutes when you don't count commercials. Three seasons, 57 episodes, starred Roy Scheider, Jonathan Brandis, Stephanie Beecham, Don Franklin, and Michael Ironside. I think it came out at an interesting time. The first two seasons is more like a Star Trek The Next Generation underwater.
Yeah, that's a great description. That's probably why it appealed to me early on, but I kind of fell off with it. I didn't even realize it had lasted as long as it did. I thought it was a one-season effort.
Three seasons, but didn't hit that episode number you want to see for syndication, which is why it hasn't lived on in cable TV or anything like that. 57 episodes is not the kind of number you usually see for that sort of thing.
Do you know, off the top of your head, or the top of your phone, perhaps, if it has landed on any of the streaming services? Because that's more than enough to justify that.
It doesn't say anything here about home media, which, you know, doesn't really count as a streaming service. I don't really see anything else. I guess everybody can open up their streaming app or device and hit that search function and see if you can find it.
The search for Sequest is on.
But anyway, yeah, Sequest DSV, that's my pick for taking place in 2015.
Excellent choice. I think Darwin the Talking Dolphin would approve. My pick is a little movie enjoying a 30th anniversary this year, since we like to talk about those on this show. And it is none other than Back to the Future Part 2. And right out of the gate, I want to recognize and give credit to the producers and or the studio for not giving in to what must have been a very compelling urge to title this movie Back to the Future with the number 2 in the title.
Oh, man.
As
no
we become so prevalent
kidding.
Later on.
No kidding. You're absolutely right. Amazingly, I had never thought of that. But I am amazed it didn't happen.
So the series is obviously all about time travel. This installment is relevant to this discussion because while the first movie centers on leaving 1985 and going back to 1955, this movie focuses primarily in the first half on going from 1985 to 2015 and then going back to 1955 again and then going back to 1985 again. And that is, you know, it's another one of these movies that has a wacky, exaggerated, overly optimistic, certainly technologically speaking, view of what the future would be. The sky is full of flying cars. Everybody remembers the self-lacing shoes and the
self-sizing jacket.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. That also has some sort of air system in it to dry itself when it's wet.
I think that's a pretty common thing in movies. They often are pretty ambitious with the level of technology that we're going to see in a given period of time, because I think, like, in our heads, we have this idea that a certain number of years is further in the future than it really is. You know, you kind of pick a number. This takes place all the way out in 2040. By then, we'll have this, this, and that. Well, 2040 is only 20 years. You know, how different is the world now compared to how it was 20 years ago? It's different.
Right.
But it's not that drastically changed. So I think sometimes that's definitely what happens. And it's especially apparent in movies that are so futuristic and take place in what is essentially the present day.
Yeah. Do you happen to have a favorite piece of 2015 technology that was shown in the movie that maybe you wished that had happened in real life or that you always liked?
I mean, see, through my current adult perspective, just the levitation technology. Yeah. I mean, how great would all that be? The hoverboards, of course, just as in terms of that being a fun thing to do, but everything flies and floats. How easy would that make life? That's the kind of thing that I notice in a movie like this. I mean, the rest of it's great. I mean, well, I don't know how great it would be to just be walking across like the village green and have holograms coming down upon you and just, you know, your whole world lit up in a cacophony of advertisements. That's a pretty common theme in futuristic movies, even that are not very much like Back to the Future. But yeah, I mean, I think just that levitation technology, that maybe seems like kind of like a boring answer, and maybe that is through like an adult's gaze, but that's the thing that pops out at me.
Right. I think for me, being a fat kid then and trying not to be such a fat kid now, but being one at heart, my favorite was always the weird hydrating Pizza Hut pizza machine. It went
no
from
kidding,
like
yes.
a little tiny pill in a package to a full-sized hot and ready pizza on your table.
Pretty goddamn convenient.
Right. We talked about some of the things from the movie that the future had in it that seem outlandish, that didn't come true. But there are a few things that actually kind of did come true that are shown in this movie. One of them being the idea of personal drones. They show in the movie, they're shown doing everything from walking a dog to capturing images for news organizations. And, you know, maybe they're not walking dogs now, but they're definitely used for photography and video and for all kinds of other, you know, menial tasks.
Package delivery.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, it's really kind of, I think that counts. That's the same. The idea of, like, I don't know if you could say tablets, but mobile payment technology. You can see that there is a kind of a some kind of a flat looking electronic device in the movie where Marty was asked to donate $100 electronically to help save the clock tower. And that's pretty similar to what we have.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that gets missed a lot when filmmakers and other creative people were trying to project future technology. The one thing that is glaringly absent from most of these things are personal devices that we have. You know, we have these cell phones, smartphones. Right. And that's the one thing that's most glaringly absent in all of these things. I think maybe Star Trek got pretty close. They have tricorders and communicators, etc. But yeah, something like that is a good... It's something in the neighborhood of what we walk around with in our pockets every day.
Right. And they even use fingerprint recognition in the movie. Marty's girlfriend, Jennifer, comes to her future home and uses her thumbprint to open the door to her own house in 2015. And obviously, we know that that is not only widespread, but, you know, we're even moving beyond that at this point.
Right.
Now, moving forward to my pick set in 2019 is a movie that was released in 1987 titled The Running Man.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is forced into a deadly game on the highest-rated TV show of the future.
Showtime!
No one has ever survived. But he has yet to play. Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Running Man.
I'll be back.
Rated R. Starts Friday at a theater near you.
Obviously starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and original Family Feud game show host Richard Dawson as a villainous game show host. It is very loosely based on the Stephen King novel of the same name from 1982, published under his pseudonym Richard Bachman, however. And it's basically about this game show where the contestants are kind of battling for their lives to the, you know, to entertain the bloodthirsty masses. There's also a bit of deception involved. to where the people watching don't quite realize how deadly the stakes are. Things are kind of covered up and things are edited to seem less severe than they are.
And to make him seem more like more of a bad guy than he is.
Right.
This movie, I think, is kind of a slept-on Schwarzenegger film. It's not one of the ones that's brought up first. Everybody talks about Terminator, Total Recall, Predator, I think, are probably like the big three. This one's really good. I love The Running Man.
Yeah, I really appreciated the combination of, I guess, wackiness, but also wackiness mixed with brutal seriousness.
Yeah, and, yeah, it is. They walk a fine line for sure.
And even though we might not be killing people in our game shows yet, there's something about the tone of it and the, I guess, the message contained within it that feels very relevant to some of the things that are happening today. Because in the real world, it feels like there aren't a lot of lengths that a corporation wouldn't go to continue making a profit. It's been also mentioned in articles in places like the New York Post that cite the film as having correctly predicted the widening gap between the rich and the poor, which is very much a current issue. Also predicted the societal obsession with reality TV fairly well, I would say.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the case. And also like has a legacy. I don't know how much it directly inspired some other examples of this type of entertainment, but you look at something like The Hunger Games, and that screams Running Man to me.
Absolutely. I mean, even, you know, a couple shows back, we celebrated the 30th anniversary of American Gladiators, and really the only difference between that and this is murder.
The life or death stakes. You're absolutely right.
Okay, well, moving from one kind of runner to another, what's your 2019 pick?
This is the entire inspiration for this conversation, because it is now early November, and once November 2019 happened, the movie that I'm about to talk about took place. So we're talking about the 1982 science fiction film Blade Runner.
Los Angeles, 2019.
There was an escape from the off-world colonies. They slaughtered 20.
The assignment? Track down 6 manufactured humans. He's the best man for the job. But he may die trying to prove it. Harrison Ford is the Blade Runner.
It takes place literally in November of 2019, which is the now.
Wait, yeah, that's right now.
That is right now, right this second. Blade Runner, of course, is an incredibly influential science fiction film. It's influenced everything from manga, anime, science fiction, cyberpunk, the list goes on and on. It was directed by Ridley Scott, starring Harrison Ford, Rucker Hauer, Sean Young, and Edward James Olmos, along with Daryl Hannah and a few others. It was not a hit. It was not a box office success. The budget for the movie was $30 million, and the box office returns were $32.9 million. So that's barely over budget.
Rough. Jesus.
And when you factor in, of course, advertising costs, that always pushes the budget higher. So This movie, by all intents and purposes, did not make back its budget. In the meantime, it has developed a huge cult following and is recognized, again, as I already said, as a hugely influential film in the genre. And you just saw it today for the very first time.
I did. I mean, if you hadn't already seen it, there's really not a better time to see it than at its absolute zenith of relevancy.
It's absolutely true.
It is legitimately great. And, you know, just everything about it screams quality, almost painstakingly so. And it's really sad and kind of a form of injustice that it didn't do better when it was initially released. I suppose I can understand some of why, even in the early 80s, audiences probably wanted something faster paced, wanted something, you know, quote unquote sexier.
It was polarizing. The biggest things that received negative feedback were the slow pacing. It has a lack of action. It definitely does not spoon feed the viewer the information that you need to understand every little thing.
Right.
And it takes its time to have conversations, tell the story, set the mood, so to speak. It is not, the movie is full of visual spectacle, but it is not throwing constant cacophonous visuals at you. It's all about environment. It's all about mood. It's all about vibe, so to speak.
Yeah, I appreciate all of that about it. I am forever chasing a movie experience that does exactly that, that does not feel the need to, you know, have a cut every 3 seconds just to stimulate some sort of constant attention. I love how this draws you in and you feel like you're a part of that world with it. And not to mention just visually, it's, I want to say for the time, but even today, it is one of the best movies I've ever seen in that respect.
It is definitely painstakingly wrought. You know, as we were watching it, we even both of us talked about how you could almost pause it at any one moment. You could pause it at any time. And what you'll be looking at is a piece of art on screen. And that is really something that takes a lot of effort. And clearly Ridley Scott was at the peak of his powers at this time.
Agreed.
So yeah, everybody should definitely, if you haven't seen Blade Runner, you should definitely see it. If you've seen it before, you should definitely see it again, especially because, as you said, it is at its peak of relevancy right now, November 2019. And also, I'd just like to throw a little bit of love to the sequel that just came out a couple years ago, Blade Runner 2049. I think Blade Runner is a better movie, the original, but Blade Runner 2049 is, I think, its equal visually. It's really easy for modern movies to take the visual aspect of what we can do with CGI these days and go way too far with it. And again, Blade Runner 2049, like its predecessor, is full of special effects shots at all times. But again, it does not throw things at you in a cacophonous way. It's all presented as backdrop, as atmosphere. And I think it's every bit as successful in that way. So I think everybody should see both Blade Runners. That's the summary of my comments here.
You make a strong case. And I look forward to seeing the sequel myself.
As you should.
Now let's move from one form of entertaining visuals to another type in the return of a segment we like to call Need It, Got It.
Got 'em, got 'em, need 'em, got 'em, got 'em, got 'em, need 'em, got 'em, need 'em, need 'em, got 'em, get 'em, got 'em, got 'em, need 'em.
Need It, Got It is our collecting segment, and this time the topic will be focused on video games. And why is that?
Because this past weekend, before we're recording, I went to the Retro Game Con in Syracuse. It is a really good retro video gaming convention that is put on every year in Syracuse, New York. You went with me last year, and it's a really good, well-put-together experience. And this year, I think, was even better. It was the convention floor was easier to navigate, and the retro computer, interactive retro computer museum is what they were calling it, was also much more accessible and navigable itself. So I thought it was really well put together. I did knock off a lot of stuff from my collection wants and needs as I am nearing, I'm not nearing completion. It's never been my goal to have every Nintendo game or every Super Nintendo game, but I did have a collection of things that I personally wanted, and I am now approaching completion on a few of those thanks to what I grabbed yesterday, or 2 days ago, that is, from this recording.
Yeah, last year I was able to go both days of the convention and share my experiences, and this year I went 0 days. So unfortunately I had to sit this one out, and I will live vicariously. Why don't you share what your haul was?
So I grabbed a classic Super Nintendo game, the original Mario Kart.
Beautiful.
I got a couple of Genesis games, RoboCop versus Terminator, which is really nice visually, but also has a lot of nostalgia for me because I played it a lot as a kid, which is a big part of the games I collect. A lot of it's just what I used to play, not necessarily what's recognized as the best.
Both properties happen to be set in the future as well.
This is true. I grabbed a game called Galaxy Force 2 for the Genesis also. This game's really well known for having really advanced a really advanced three-dimensional world. It is sprite-based. It's not polygons. So the system is not rendering a 3D environment on screen, but it uses the Genesis technology to really its peak to present you what seems to be a three-dimensional environment. It's really impressive, actually.
Nice.
I got the Castlevania Adventure, or Castlevania The Adventure, depending on how you read the logo, for the original Game Boy. I grabbed a game called Halley Wars for the Sega Game Gear, which is an overhead shooter that really looks good for that system. And three PlayStation games, the original Crash Bandicoot, the original Rayman, and a game called Star Wars Dark Forces, which is a first-person shooter that uses a Doom-type visual, a Doom-style engine for the visual aspect of the game. So that's my haul. I try not to be a big spender with these collections. I do collect for a lot of different systems, but I tend to really look for something that's cheap. The speculator market for retro gaming is really, it's a guessing game. So I was patient enough to find what I wanted for cheap.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to missing it again next year.
Plan ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I think that will bring this installment of the Nerd Bomber podcast to a close. But first, we would be remiss if we didn't wish everybody a happy National Candy Day. And to help celebrate, I think it's only fair that we reveal our favorite candies. What do you have?
Well, this is really tough for me because I certainly like a lot of different candies. But if I had to pick one, I would say Reese's. But not necessarily the Reese's cups. I prefer the chocolate to peanut butter ratio in things like the Reese's egg or the Reese's Christmas tree, the seasonal items. So I think that's what I would go with.
Hmm. Not the Reese's bats for Halloween?
I'm on board.
I'm not really... That's a very solid choice. I think if I'm going with a Reese's product, it would be Pieces. But I'm going with chocolate and peanut butter as well, just in a different form. Snickers has these new, I think they're just called Creamy Snickers or Snickers Creamy. They're like little squares. Mm-hmm. And they come in peanut butter or almond butter or even a maple almond butter, I think. And I have been eating the crap out of those. And we even had some this evening, actually.
Indeed we did.
I can't quite say they're my all-time favorite, but they are certainly my current favorite. Before that, it's too many to name. There's so many great ones.
Absolutely. Way too many.
So, you know, help celebrate by going out and grabbing whatever you can off the shelf and and just destroying your teeth.
Shoving it down your gaping maw.
So with that, I have been your friend Claude.
And I'm just Jamie.
And we will see you next time.
Later!
In the laboratory of Dr. Frankenstein, something incredible was created. The great taste of pure milk chocolate and delicious peanut butter. Unfortunately, no one would listen. And so the world would have to wait for the two great tastes that taste great together in Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
The Nerd Bomber Podcast is a Ghost Factory Internet production brought to you by the WHAM Network.